What is that, like Hot Topic?
You would think. It's just like a local music place.
They're too cool. They won't sell to you.
Yeah, right, exactly. I don't know if you saw everybody that worked there. And then mostly they service like marching band instruments. So I don't know if I'm... I think my coolness may be below marching band, which I accept at this stage of my life. You know, maybe. I don't know.
Do you walk in and you say, I'm looking for something to wax my flute with?
Yeah, I need a little cork grease. Grease up my woodwind.
All right, I have started recording.
I hope you got that nugget, that good exchange.
Yeah, there's another one for the outtakes file.
There you go.
That nugget comment.
Or that's the cold open.
The Douglas Stank Podcast. This is episode 3 of the Douglas Stank Podcast.
You know what they say about the third time?
What?
Actually, they say a lot of things about the third time. Third time of what, though, I guess is the question. Is it the third time of the charm, or is this the third time?
I'll beat you to it. I'll say I am the host of the podcast. I'm Nathan. I'm a member of the band Douglas Stank, and who are you?
Hey, I'm Henry, and I'm also a member and also of the band. And I don't know if I'd be a co-host. Sometimes, I think right now, since today, maybe one of the efforts where it was a single, you know, where you had to do all the orchestration and the writing, I may be more of like a conducting the interview, so to speak, and like maybe I should take that role a little bit.
I just wish it was like we'd say, not only am I on the podcast, I'm also a member of the band. It'd be like the old Beer Club for Men commercials.
No, I was tempted to. Yeah. I really was. I may have already used that.
Maybe we need to edit that in.
So today is either third time's the charm, or three strikes you're out, or the third date.
You know, I was listening to the last episode, and, you know, again, to throw back the curtain, when we're recording these, trying to get them ready for a season now, that was actually quite some time ago, because now, in retrospect, it sounds a little weird, all that stuff we were talking about the football teams, because... The Bears season hasn't turned out that well. They were 5-0. Now, what's their record?
Well, you know, they're getting close to 500. They've lost a couple. So
close to 500. So they're like a few games above 500.
Yeah, still a few above. I think last I checked, you know, last I remember watching. Although they have a bye week coming up, they need to correct the ship. You know,
they have benched Trubisky, but then they brought him back, didn't they?
Yeah. Oh yeah. They brought him. Wait, did they bring him back? They're talking about it. It all depends on how Foles does, I think, against the Packers.
Well, I just gotta say, when you got a guy like you got a Tebow, you just embrace being Tebow. You just gotta accept. The most amazing thing about Tim Tebow, watching him play quarterback, is like he's awful, and like his throwing motion's preposterous. But then you know, they had that Denver defense. And so Tim Tebow would throw passes into the dirt for three quarters, which is a positive because he's not throwing interceptions, because nobody can intercept a pass that bounces 3 yards before any receivers. And then out of nowhere, he'd make the play to win the game in the fourth quarter, and you'd win every game because of defense, except when you play, like, you know, the Patriots or something, then that doesn't work out. But, like, to all the other teams, and they won that playoff. They won that playoff game when, like, the first play of overtime, the Steelers just, like, do the stupidest coverage possible. Like, just hits a slant for, like, an 80-yard touchdown.
But, hey, but they brought in a guy like Foles who wrote the book on winning, literally. So, I mean...
Did he write a book?
Oh, yeah, he wrote a book about winning the Super Bowl.
Is that on sale at the gift rack at Soldier Field?
Oh, yeah, I think you can find it there.
I've got to say, and I don't care how many times I say this... I'm a little surprised by the Bears fans. They think the season's over. Like, I watched the last Bears home game, no fans in the stands at all.
Yeah. Oh, exactly.
It's so weird. Like, no diehards at all. Like, you know.
That might be Matt Nagy's master plan. No fans. He can control the sound level. You know, because I hate to say it, over the years, but sometimes Bears fans, even, you know, people I know and fans I love, have been known to, like, get loud at the wrong times. You know, you're getting loud on offense. You should be getting loud when the Bears are on defense. So Nagy,
what if the beer vendor comes by? You got to get loud.
Well, there you go. But I mean, they still pipe in the beer sounds, I think, the vendors, even though they're not physical today.
Oh.
Hey, and it's important to know that, because if you think about it, today's song somewhat has this theme of what are the robots for? Here, the robots at Soldier Field are making the beer vending sounds. If you think about it.
If you're trying to segue away from this uncomfortable football talk, we can talk about the reason for the podcast. And that would be track 3 of our first release. This song is for the robots. That's the title. That's not just that. That's the summation of the song, but it's also the title. This song is for the robots.
So where do you want to go? Where do you want to start first? Do you want to talk a little bit about the inspiration? How did this come? This was you were inspired by...
Well, I think people would contest that. But no, this song really started like a... I was, I'm always trying to learn new things, new tricks from music production. And so I had, some new soft synth sounds, some bass lines. And so I plugged in my keyboard. I got some 80s keyboards. I played this on a Roland JX8P. I'm reading it right off of it. It's sitting right in front of me. I also have the Roland W30 Music Workstation. Yeah. Yeah, you're all jealous.
Now, which do you prefer for this?
Well, I used to prefer the Roland JX8P, but it has a key that sticks.
Okay.
So now I usually go with the other one. I all the capabilities they do, I'm sure they could do a lot, but mostly I'm just using them as a MIDI controller because I don't really know how they work. So,
but couldn't they also control other MIDI controllers? I think I remember you saying like it could be a mastermind.
Yeah, I don't know why you had to ask a follow up question after I said I don't really know how they work. No, they the one that says Music Workstation, it could control. You know, you could plug in other things, all hooked together. It could command a drum machine what to do and all that other sort of things. And the other one, but you know what, a computer can also do that. The modern programs. You know, I won't have to save it on a 3.5-inch floppy drive, which this keyboard has.
I see. Okay. Yeah, so we're going to bypass that feature. Built-in obsolescence here. Well, not built-in, but obsolescence and, basically the robots taking over.
I started off with this bass line, so let me play it. I love this bass line.
That is the best. You know, it already kind of paints an ominous...
It's probably in a minor key or something.
It's automated a little bit. It has kind of automated
real
feel.
Yeah, and I don't think it took me long to come up with the drum beat to go along with that. If I can play that clip. There's the drums. All right, might seem a bit repetitive. It's gonna keep going until we stop it. Yeah, so those go together very nicely, I think. I don't know. Are you following along? That was the soft synth drum. So those sound really good. You turn up the reverb or whatever, and it gives that sound.
They really do work well together. It's like gears meshing, you know, in this automated technological world.
Yeah, I hope everybody at home is taking notes.
You take notes. There's going to be either a quiz, it'll be an essay form, though.
No, so I think even at this point with these, the way this bass line and the drums come together and the fact that I'd done it like all sort of electronic, it had me thinking that this was a song. Had me thinking that like, oh, I should write a song for robots, right? Robots are very influential these days. The so-called AI everybody has, and you even get situations where robots are writing songs or writing movies and all this other stuff, and it makes me sick. But hey, they're going to be the arbiters of everything. You might as well write songs for it. Well, cut out the middlemen. We're the middlemen. So robots are the ones really making the decisions about like what songs are hits and everything. Like they're looking into algorithms and what. Why not just write songs for them? Why waste time writing songs for humans?
There you go. And I think you're starting to really, really shape that kind of tension in the song. You know, you have that tension between this is a tribute to the robots, but also it's ominous because you better pay tribute to the robots.
Well, we don't really have the fight in the song yet. Let me play. People might recognize this song. I am a frequent guest and producer on another podcast, the Calm Down Catherine podcast, and people might recall this song as being the theme for the mailbag episodes. Everyone's favorite episode is a mailbag episode.
That's true.
A version of the song plays as the theme. So let me play the music that the form that it appears when it's the mailbag theme. Although here's the mailbag theme. It'll go like this. Mailbag, 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 mailbag. I love that. The mailbag episodes are the best episodes, even though some people doubt the honesty or the authenticity of the mail that we get at the Calm Down Catherine podcast.
No. And now, wait a minute. I know some people outside of you, outside of the people on the podcast or involved with the podcast that have gotten their letters responded to.
See, that's what I see. It's a service that we do for everyone else, but we're not here to talk about that. That song, actually, there is another element in that song that we didn't discuss, and that is actually I did use my 80s keyboards, like the actual sound. I didn't use them just as a soft synth. So there's a lead line in there that is from probably the Roland JX8P. I could not tell you what button it was, but it's there.
Nice. So it did feature.
Yeah.
That's really, you know.
Well, I think, you know, we had the song like that, and even before I had recorded any lyrics in my mind, I was always thinking, the song is for the robots, or something like that, you know? That's what I kept thinking. Although I didn't really have much more than that. And, you know, the idea that, like, hey, you know, the robots are the ones you need to impress. And so, like, I'm programming the song like that, or whatever. And when you make the song electronically, like doing MIDI, soft synths and stuff, you can play it with a keyboard. But better than that, you can edit what you play to be perfectly on the beat, right? That would impress the robots, right? You play it like a robot. The drum...
The precision.
Yeah, everything's precise. Everything's right on the beat where it should be. And you play it in patterns and everything like that, right? So, but I only really had that part of the song. But then you visited here and you inspired me to write another part of the song that I'll play a clip so you can hear, kind of like you're the muse. You come here and you say maybe there could be something else, and then I write something else. I think you had even left the room when I wrote it. So it wasn't even like you were like, no, I think we need an E sharp there. No, it wasn't any of that.
It was something else. I was adding by omission.
I think you said something like, well, we need something here, but, you know, I got to stop at Arby's. They don't have Arby's where I live. So you live relatively close to one. By the time I'm back, you better have something. And then I did. I'll play the clip now. Alright. So nice. It goes back into the other part. This actually makes me think, well, what do you think, what would you say are the inspirations to this song so far? Like, you know, the last song we were talking about, what kind of blues it was. So what do you think inspires this song?
Well, you know, it's definitely unique. It's probably more inspired by various forms of science fiction, but I don't know if you're too much. I know you like some Science fiction.
Well, I don't mean just the lyrical content, but like the music. I mean,
the musical content. Well, you don't listen to any Trans Am. Speaking of, not Trans Am, which was named for that Neil Young album, I think. But they have kind of this electronic future rock sound. But I don't think that.
You're
I mean,
that's
it sounds
the name
like
of a band.
Yeah, that's literally a name of a band from like the late 2000s or early 2000s, late 90s maybe. They do have kind of they started using, but the synth that they were using is not soft. It's not the same kind of soft synth that we have now. And they were kind of a punk band that were also electronic. Also, I know you're familiar, I think, with the band Captured by Robots. That's a little different though than
no,
what you're doing.
I don't know that.
Oh, you didn't know Captured by Robots?
You know, actually, when the song was becomes the song is for the robots, that definitely makes me think of Kraftwerk's song, We Are the Robots.
Well, there you go. See, that's where they were all inspired. Yeah, I know they were.
We are the robots. I mean, I think you can hear things like Nine Inch Nails or something in it. All right, so we were talking about the songs for the robots, and we went through a lot of the musical elements. Now it's time to bring in what I feel is the heart of the song. How did I phrase it earlier in my notes? The mission statement of the song. If we would play the clip. You write songs now. You make movies now. This one for you. This elegy is for you. Now for the listeners at home who may be ignorant of the Western culture, what is an elegy?
Well, you would describe that, I suppose, as like a poetic honoring, I suppose, right?
I think it's a song about death.
Oh. Okay, sorry.
You write it about someone who's died. So that turns it on to the robots immediately. It turns the idea from being a song for robots because of my desire to turn this songwriting thing into a quick buck and seeing the robots as the true arbiters of money, and then turning it into the song is for you. This elegy is for you because I want to dance on their graves. Though, I don't know if robots have graves so much as dumps. Because that's where they belong.
Yeah. You tell those robots. I think the robots are onto us because they did kill my computer earlier.
Do you think that robots write good songs or make good movies?
You know, that's a tough question. You know, I don't think I've once seen... So give me an example. Make sure we're on the same page of the movie that's written by robots or the song.
Well, you know, they claim these days that they could set up algorithms to, like, punch out sequels better than what some writers do. I know there's definitely a place where you can see robot writing, and that is a lot of these websites that cover sports in particular, but probably other topics too. They have fired enough of their writers, because if you look at like articles that are like game previews, they're written by robots, like on Yahoo Sports. If you look at a preview of like the next football game, they just figure, oh, any preview article is just going to be a bunch of stats. Oh, this team's good on offense. They've been scoring such and such and whatever. And so they just, all the articles follow a formula, and they're like awful. They're terrible. But they figure, like, the amount of people that will stop going to their website for this nonsense is worth it, considering how much money they're saving by not paying humans.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, like, that kind of thing is going to, you know, we get, like, big budget movies and, sequels. They'll kind of all write themselves anyways, right?
That's the whole idea. The robots would write, like, Angelina Jolie plus Brad, or what's his name, Johnny Depp is box office gold. That kind of thing.
I kind of figure the people making the DC universe movies, they're probably robots, right? That's why they're hot garbage.
Yeah. Oh yeah. But I think Brad, what's his name, Snyder,
Zack Snyder. He's a robot.
He may be a robot. Now, are you going to differentiate robots from androids? Are you going
Androids dream of electric sheep?
We'll have to ask Harrison Ford.
He wouldn't even know where to start. To be a robot, you don't have to have robot arms and legs or whatever. You could just be one of these. It's like you got the robots are making the telemarketing calls. God, every day at my place of work, I get calls from a Google robot attempting to strong arm me. They're like, "Your Google listing has not been updated. Call this number. We would hate for you to not be listed on Google anymore. Imagine what would happen to your business if you were no longer on Google." And then you call the number, and it's nothing about verifying a listing or updating information. It's a sales pitch. It's a sales pitch, and it's like gibberish. You know, you get this gangster robot calling, and it's just about a shakedown. It's ridiculous.
Oh, man. So that is already a way the robots were taking over. I thought Hardee's was going to have the robots take over the flipping of the burgers and compiling of the burgers, which is, you know, I think, you know, it's in this, robots have taken over assembly lines, so that's another assembly line. It'd be nice to fight it. And I thought, in fact, maybe Hardee's decided against it in these times. Also, the robots taking away stock, you know, jobs to stock things. But you're saying they're moving beyond manual labor. They're moving into intellectual
labor. That's interesting. You know, you brought up that stock thing. That's what's interesting is because the Wall Street wizards who love trashing other people's jobs just to make themselves a quick buck, right? Mm-hmm. They go to the schools where they get taught economics is math and not anything to do with people. And so to them, whatever increases the money in their pocket is what's right. And you can't, you know, so that's where all the decisions lead. And so it always made sense to them to like cut people jobs for technology or shipping jobs overseas or whatever. And now people are finding out that robots can trade stocks better than humans because they can make they can beat other people decision making because they only take a split second to make a call to buy or sell.
Well,
whereas a human, even if they made the decision just as fast, their finger would have to hit a button. So now those people can they're all getting unemployed, and I think that's called irony, right?
It's calling everyone else obsolete. That's true.
The robot makers are laughing, but then the robot makers, they're going to make a robot so robotic that it can make robots, and then they'll be out of a job.
But that's the thing. It seems like the end point is always inevitably humans are obsolete. It feels like there's never been like humans and robots existing, you know, in a peaceful kind of shared environment. We're either turned into a by the robot or we're just out and out wiped out. Why do you think that is culturally?
Anyways, did you want to go back into your feelings about the robots? How about this? I used to ask this question to people all the time. Do you believe in the coming robot apocalypse?
That's the question. You're right. And now are we recording this?
Yeah, we're recording.
So the robots will hear us. So you do have to be careful because, you know, the first place they start is they take out the people with any knowledge.
So what you're saying is that you do believe in the coming robot apocalypse.
Well, why does it always... That was actually my question. For you too, I wanted you to think, why is it that humans and robots can't coexist in a utopian future? Why is it always they realize we're redundant or obsolete, so their whole jibe is to kind of wipe out humanity and just build
you don't
and keep
think
replicating
the,
themselves?
You don't think the robots will be like the... in the robot novels of Isaac Asimov, and they'll see themselves as a hindrance to humanity, and they'll take themselves out.
Do they really? Is that the Foundation trilogy? Is that a spoiler? Should we say major spoilers?
Oh, it's actually in a book that is a prequel to the Foundation books.
Ah, okay. What did you think? So, as a prequel, the robots actually remove themselves from the equation?
The Foundation books don't have robots. The prequel serves to unify his robot novels and short stories with his Foundation books. Because the robot sidekick of his robot novels is live, and it's like tens of thousands of years later, and he's still alive, influencing galactic history, and because somebody, some robot taught him that robots were going to be a hindrance, a crutch for humans.
That's interesting that in his approach, like robots realized that they would be relied on the way that businesses want to rely on them. Some businesses, take out the human element, replace it with robots.
Do you want to ask me whether I believe in the coming robot apocalypse?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Tell me, please. Do you believe in the coming robot apocalypse?
No, that's nonsense. There's no such thing as artificial intelligence. That's stupid.
that we could make a robot that could approach the complexity of the human mind?
Nope. I think all questions like that totally underestimate what it means to be human and human intelligence. And, they think they're going to create an artificial intelligence by it just means shrinking down computer chips or whatever, or putting them more complex and together. That's totally misunderstanding human intelligence. That's what I say.
Oh, exactly. Not to mention intuition. Not only intuition, but spontaneous, genius, like eureka moments. Computers, I don't think, are capable of producing anything like that, because it all depends on these. I suppose there are some...
What they call artificial intelligence, when they like advertise on TV that like, oh, buy artificial intelligence. I don't even know why they advertise this. Buy artificial intelligence for IBM. Like, I'm sitting at home being like, yeah, maybe I will get some IBM, But it's like, oh, what they mean by artificial intelligence is really just a really fast search engine. And like, does anybody really think a search engine is so smart?
Yeah.
Like when they had the one that played Jeopardy. They're like, oh, see, it's just as smart as humans. It's like, yeah, but that's just a game with very set rules that you just figure it out, a search engine approach to the decoding Jeopardy answers in order to create a question. That's not intelligence.
Well, yeah, humans would score well, too, if you gave them a search engine that they could just type in some terms and pull out an answer.
Well, I mean, yeah, but that's, like robot attempts to make a song, you're just going to end up spitting out whatever the programmer put in for what they like in a song.
Yeah. Oh, that's it. See, that's the human side. You're right. They will always be touched by humanity.
You can't simulate human intelligence by like a series of logical things, statements. Not because humans aren't logical, but because that's misunderstanding, like, human intelligence. The idea of symbolic language use. I think it really underestimates language use. Like, people think they're going to break down everything to ones and zeros, but that is not going to simulate intelligence. So I am not afraid of the coming robot apocalypse. More likely, if like the robots killed us all, it's not because they became self-aware. It's because some rich guy who owns all the robots told them to kill us all. That's what needs to be stopped, is rich people owning robots.
Yes, that includes Rocky. He should never have owned that robot in Rocky 4.
Is it like a robot butler?
Yeah, it was that robot butler. Robot butlers are the creepiest, frankly, compared, Now, but you're absolutely right in this idea that because human intelligence is not just one dimensional, it's not just A to B to C. It's very much more. It takes, and like you say, symbolic language. Our language has layers to it. It's our the connections in our mind are not linear. They're parallel and they're overlapping and they're reaching into
I don't even think computer intelligence really understands language, Anyways, I'm not here to talk about the book Lost in the Cosmos either.
Is this covered in at all in Lost in the Cosmos? Do they talk? They don't talk.
Oh, about yeah, it. Yeah. You got to read that book. Yep. It's the last self-help book you'll ever need.
Now, who wrote this book?
Walker Percy.
Well, that'll be saved for the Douglas Stink Book Club. We could do that.
Anyways.
That'll be coming.
Anyway, so let me tell you how that all focuses in. So, right, this song is an elegy for the robots intending to overthrow them. So it lures the robots in at the beginning of the song by being very precise and very programmed to music. But if you had a subtle ear, you would actually hear that break down over time. Now, it's a little subtle when I talk about the drum beats, because the drum beat is for like the bass snare is like just repeats mostly over and over again. But the where the cymbals and the hi-hats play actually at the beginning is precise on beats, but then later in the song that actually falls apart and it starts moving off the beats. Not because it's actually being played by a human and humans make mistakes like that, but because I programmed it that way. So that the robot was used to listening to that, and now he's getting dissonance. Now he's getting what he doesn't expect. It's going to jam his ones and zeros, right?
Then
in a similar way, the guitar at the beginning is just playing the chords of the song or in a pattern, but then it becomes a rebellious guitar leading humans to victory over the robots by the end. So I have a clip here that is the rebellious guitar solo. That, who is it that played this one?
Well, that would be you.
That would be
that would be for the record.
You know what, though? I think I don't remember. I think maybe you did a take that you weren't that satisfied with, but then I think I kind of mostly took the ideas that you had and just did it. And I think, or is that the other song? I don't know. Anyways,
no. The other song might have been the bass line that had elements. I don't know.
Oh, here. Let me play the clip. That ought to make their diodes jam.
There you go. It's the ultimate weapon against the robots in the song For the Robots.
What?
That was the ultimate weapon against the robots.
I mean, I don't know. It sounds like an 80s movie where somebody battles robots with an electric guitar. Is it Ralph Macchio in that movie?
Well, young Fred Savage.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's so rad.
He's the kid's sidekick.
The power glove is so rad.
It is rad. You know, you will see secret levels of robots that you would not see anywhere else on any other 8-bit Nintendo system in that movie. Battling the robots.
I don't, you know what, to be fair, to break the fourth wall or the third wall, the fifth wall or whatever, I didn't actually see that movie. What was that movie called, The Wizard?
Oh, yeah. It's like one of the worst reviewed movies in history.
Really? What about Mac and Me?
That's probably worse. But The Wizard was basically called one, like a 2-hour-long ad for Nintendo, basically.
Yeah. I wonder how that review stacks up against any of the Transformers movies.
Hey, the original Transformers, the movie from the 80s, that was pretty
sick. Not talking about that. I'm talking about those Michael Bay ones. Man, those are so horrible. Hot take. It's like they'll be on TV, and I won't even know which one it is. And I'm like, oh, I'll give it a few minutes. And they make no sense. And I actually heard on other podcasts people who were involved in making those movies like talk about them and stuff. And they talk about how, you know, he's taking money from like Chinese companies to do product placement. And you're like, you watch and be like, this is written for Chinese industrialists or something. I don't even know what's going on in the movie. Like there's a scene. They were paid like $1 million to showcase a brand of milk that's in China. And you don't, like, an American audience doesn't even know that it's product placement, but it is.
Now, who gets that money? Does Michael Bay get that money directly?
You know, it helps finance the movie or whatever.
Well, the whole thing is so shaky anyways, right? That's the
keep Transformers?
Yeah, they can't keep the camera steady when they're filming it, and you don't really see what's happening.
Yeah.
Well, it was kind of cool when they destroyed Chicago.
That happened in one of the movies?
Oh, yeah. It was the one with, was Leonard Nimoy, I think, the voice of the arch-villain robot. That's the biggest problem, too, with sentient robots, is eventually they would find their way to Earth and conquer, even though we didn't create them. They would try.
Well, as long as they make toys of them. Yeah. All right, so...
as long as the toys aren't GoBots.
Beyond this, the symbolic guitar attack upon the robots, there is also the famous secret message of the song. If you want me to play the clip.
Play the secret message, yes. Yeah. Everybody take out your binary decoder ring.
Yeah. Or we'll play it, and then we'll talk about how you can decode this message. 0100 1 0 1 1 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 0 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 1 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0
what? 0100111.
What do you think I'm trying to say here?
That's the thing. It's brilliant. Its brilliance is the secrecy of that message. I think you're. It has to be a message against the robots that is meant just for them.
Do you know how? What's the secret about decoding this?
Sure.
I'm not sure if how wide this knowledge is about this binary.
About binary code?
About ASCII characters.
Yeah, everything is encoded. All ASCII characters can be converted to zeros and ones.
How many digits?
What now? How many is each?
How many binary digits for each letter?
Is it eight?
Yeah, it's eight, and it's 8-bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if you were to write out those numbers. You know, it's interesting, actually, because maybe interesting is going too far. This same exercise was on a recent episode of Amazing Race. The Amazing Race people, they go to a computer lab in India, and they got to do some stupid, like, Xbox Kinect game. And then at the end, they get a binary message, and they have to decode it. And, you know, some of them screwed up decoding it a few times. But the answer is each letter has a different binary 8-digit code associated with it, a series of zeros and ones. And so play that message from the song, break it up into 8 digits, and translate that, and it'll have the message of how I really feel about the robots.
I see. So are we going to give the audience a little time to do it? Or should they pause the podcast? Or are you not going to reveal the message?
Maybe pause the podcast.
Maybe we should reveal next episode.
Oh, yeah. And the next episode will be like, for those playing at home, the answer was...
Yes. I think that's the way to go. Unless you want to keep it right now.
The answer is kill the robots! Yeah, maybe I'll bleep that out. That's what the binary message says.
I have to ask you about that message. Is it only the music song creating robots, or the ones that pick the playlist? Those robots.
All the robots. Do you think there's some that we shouldn't kill?
Well, what about Johnny Five?
I mean, none of them are alive. Oh, Johnny Five's alive.
He's alive.
Remember he reprogrammed himself. You know, it's funny. I had a guy at work who insisted to me that I don't remember the name. There was like a recent movie where there's like a little soldier robot that some like a street gang captures, and then they make him like a little gangster robot.
Oh yeah, Chappie. Is that
Chappie? It? He kept insisting that was a remake of Short Circuit. They'd be like, that Chappie. Oh, yeah. They keep saying, hey, you know, that's just Short Circuit. Like, he didn't mean, he wasn't making a commentary that, like, they stole the plot from Short Circuit. He was like, that was a reboot of Short Circuit.
He thought it was like, literally, this is the reboot.
Yeah, like they paid Chappie for the rights to Short Circuit and turned it to Chappie.
Oh, man. Well, you know, it's funny. So does Who's that other robot? Who's that cartoon or animated robot?
C-3PO.
Wally. Well, of course, C-3PO. Well, they're in a separate league. Those are droids. Droids, we don't have any animosity towards, I don't think.
Well, think about what they say in one of the prequels. Ewan McGregor says, well, if droids could really think, then we'd all be dead.
There you go. Oh, see? He even knew about the idea of the droid apocalypse.
Yeah.
In the Star Wars universe. You know, for the record, there are actually some droids with bad programming, but like you say, it all came down to human programming.
Well, some of them had bad motivators.
Yes, bad motivators. That's true. Now, if you want a deep Star Wars cut, you could look into 000. Ugh. He is a truly evil droid.
Well, the only one that ever mimicked some sort of rebelliousness was that one from the Solo movie. L7?
Yeah. I don't know about L7. Was it L7? L7, I think they have their own brand of rebelliousness.
I don't know. Anyways.
That was L3, inspired L3? By L7. Inspired by.
Did I get my L's crossed? What the
you
L?
Did. You got your L's totally crossed.
It's the L color word. Me bad.
Yeah, you know, it's... But it always does come down to programming. They're not bad, they're just programmed that way.
Now, before we play the song and this podcast, how do you think this song is performing out there in...
Oh, can I guess? Can I hazard a guess here? Can I throw something out?
Oh, I don't have an answer.
Oh, this was a rhetorical, because I think we're probably big in East Asia, potentially, and this song...
East Asia?
Maybe. Maybe Japan, specifically. I don't know about China. I was thinking just because... You know, they do like their robots in different ways.
Anime. I can pull up the numbers on streams and such, right? Stacking up them slivers of pennies that we get. And I can say that, like, you know, at the time of this recording, which I don't know if we want to reveal how far into the football season we are, but we have earned about $1.80.
Wow.
Overall, all our songs. But that doesn't take into account all the streams yet, because there's like a lag. We do have about 1,500 streams on Spotify total. And I just want to say that probably more than 90% of those are me. I don't know why you're not pulling your weight. All you gotta do... is take every one of your devices, turn the sound all the way down, and just have it streaming our songs all day long. That's all you got to do.
In the background, right?
Yeah.
That's a good idea. Especially now at night, it's possible too, I imagine.
On a computer or like a Amazon Fire Stick or Roku, that's the best way to do it, because then you could just, it won't, like if you do it on a phone and you haven't paid for Spotify, it won't let you pick like something and just play it straight. It always want to shuffle it. But on a computer or on like a TV device, it might play ads, but it'll let you just like pick Douglas Stank and just play all the songs. Now, all the listeners at home, you should all be doing this. You're all loyal Douglas Stank heads. Should they call themselves Stank heads or Duggies?
Stankies?
Stankies? I think they do better than that.
Stank heads.
Well, maybe that's Stink a listener head? Contest.
Yeah, hey, there we go. Mail-in contest. We should open a mailbag, too, for people to send in our own mailbag. Although we'll need a different mailbag song, because you already used the songs for the robots for the Calm Down Catherine podcast.
Yes. Anyway, so should we say goodbye? Should we say goodbye and then play our song?
Well, actually, I have one more thing. I know we're getting a little deep into the weeds and the economic.
You still have something in your notes.
Of song, yes, yeah, something on the yellow pad we got to get to. Along those lines, I think there's better reimbursement for artists, those other artists out there, if your songs are streamed from a premium, like Amazon Unlimited or Apple Plus Music or whatever, there is a premium reimbursement, I think.
Okay.
So we need to...
You know, what's interesting about you bring that up, and you mentioned that, and that might imply that you were doing this, but like every time I go and look, I see the 1,500 streams I've done on Spotify, and I see like one or two streams on Apple Music or Amazon, whatever.
How about Amazon Unlimited? Okay, well, I need to carry my weight on Amazon Unlimited.
No, I've noticed the one stream that you've done. And I'll let you know. You tell me right, and you get answer the question straight. One person out there paid to download one of our songs. And do you know who it is?
It depends on which song, because I have to admit, I know someone close to me here who has paid to download one of the songs.
Oh, only one song is downloaded. It'd be that one. It was Cotton Eye Joe.
Yes, yeah.
Who was paid that? To download
it. I think it was, it may have been my lovely wife. Here are,
when I mention that we've made $1.80 so far, we stacked up the slivers of a penny. Keep in mind that 80 of those cents are from that one download.
No way. Really? We make that much if other people actually decide to download a song?
If one download gives you the distributor is in the UK, so you got to translate pounds to dollars. One download gives you 78 hundredths of a pound.
Oh, man. We could be stacking up pounds.
Whereas a stream gets you a fraction of a pence.
Really? That's in pences.
And we got 6 streams in Africa, and those don't amount even to a penny, which is that's fine.
But if you think about how much that is worth, if you were in Africa in certain countries, the pound and dollar rate would translate a little higher. You can get a little more for your money.
I don't know what that has to do with it, but hello to all our listeners in Africa.
Yes. Welcome.
Don't worry. We'll be talking about telemarketers calling later.
If you're in North Africa, salam.
They don't like salami.
Oh, no? A bologna?
All right, so let's play the song.
All right, here we go.
You keep us safe. You do our work. We have our big fat butt because of you. Algorithms are all that's in them. You know what we like. You give us what we like. The song is for the road.
body sauce now, too.
That's right, Henry. The delicious dressing that Pizza Bob's has been serving all these years while keeping the recipe a top secret is now available in bottles for home use. Chipotle sauce, the delicious dressing that made Chipotle famous and kept people coming back to Pizza Bob's for decades, can now be yours at home. Put it on salads, use it as a dip, dress up those homemade burgers, or put it on whatever you like.
You know, now you can have Chipotle sauce shipped anywhere in your home in the continental United States.
Can't make it to Ann Arbor? You can have delicious Chipotle sauce shipped to your home anywhere in the United States. Go to our website and order today. PizzaBobs.net. PizzaBobs.net. What's that website again? PizzaBobs.net, where you can order Chipotle sauce shipped to your home.
In a world full of
takes, hot takes,
one woman whose takes are so hot.
If you put it up your butt first, would that wash the cockroaches into your brain? Because I'm against that too.
She needs a podcast just to calm her down.
Calm down, Catherine!
Coming to you weekly, it's Catherine.
I didn't learn to tie my shoes until I was like 8 years old.
And her special guest.
I didn't actually study.
Yes, I have dead birds in my backyard.
No topic is off limits.
Taco Bell, I have a lot to say about Taco Bell.
She tells it like it is.
Chocolate diamonds are garbage.
If you have a problem with it, tell it to the
mailbag.
Calm down, Catherine. Greatest podcast in the history of
Before you
man.
Try to kick out the toenail in someone else's eye, you should remove the toe from your own. That was from Jesus.
Hey, Henry, do you remember back when our favorite rock band put out a dance album?
Oh, yeah. Hey, who could forget? Yeah.
That was the time of my life. It was the swinging 2020s.
Yeah, exactly, the swinging 2020s.
Everything was right in the world.
They were playing hits at the club.
I'll tell you what brings me back. It's songs like The Weeknd Starts on Thursday Night.
The Weeknd Starts on Thursday Night. The Weeknd Starts on Thursday Night. The Weeknd Starts on Thursday Night. The Weeknd Starts on Thursday Night.
You remember. You can't lock down the beat.
I can't lock down the beat.
Who could forget that jam?
I remember.
But I'll tell you what gets my heart pumping is Sprinkle Some Diamonds. Such a classic.
I remember meeting my wife to that song.
Sometimes, though, you're in the mood for something a little more laid back, a little more classy, and that's why I always put on Douglas Stank's immortal version of Chopin's Prelude E Minor. But you can still dance to it.
That's right.
Who can forget their immortal hit, My Baby Has Poop-Stained Balls?
Oh, yeah. And I remember shaking it like an Etch-A-Sketch.
Oh, that dance sensation was everywhere. People dancing like they're turning the knobs, dancing like they're erasing their Etch-A-Sketches. Takes me back.
I was turning so many knobs back then. I was served with a cease and desist.
You know, I also like the classic sort of like album tracks that maybe they didn't get the radio airplay, but man, did I like the jam all night to Love Is an Open Sore.
Love Is an Open Sore!
Oh, yeah. No, that's one earworm that festers like nothing else.
Yes, it festers.
It festers into your heart. Through your heart.
And of course, the collection wouldn't be complete without the Eurodance hit Love and Dancing.
Love.
That's true.
And dancing.
Nothing else going on in the early 2020s
and
but to jam in the clubs.
Love. And dancing.
Where can I find this collection of music, though?
If they were smart, they'd only release it in limited quantities as an NFT.
But they're not smart. It's available everywhere.
Oh, you're kidding me. Oh, no.
Coming soon on streaming service and downloaded, available everywhere. Douglas Stank, we would like you to
dance.